Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the $787 billion American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, President Obama gives a $78 billion stimulus check to clean energy, efficiency, and green transportation, the foundation of a green economy. But with oil prices way down and the whole economy flat on its back, can green tech, clean tech, power it back? Is the green engine big enough to do the job? This hour, On Point, we'll ask two players with a big stake in the answer, legendary venture capitalist John Doerr and Fred Krupp, head of the Environmental Defense Fund. You can join the conversation. Is green tech our golden ticket out of this economic bust? Does saving the economy and environment at once sound too good to be true or just right? Joining me first today from New York is Adam Aston, Energy and Environment Editor for Businessweek magazine. Adam, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
Your headline just last month, Will Green Energy Wilt from Lack of Funds? What's going on? Let's take private investment first. Are they still willing, ready, eager to jump into the green economy?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of certainly public enthusiasm, as we saw with the election of Obama, and I think the groundswell there. The bigger problem that overhangs everything from your daily shopping to, you know, CEOs of utilities making decisions about what to build is the capital markets. There's just not enough capital going around right now, and there's a lot of uncertainty about what to do in the future. So that affects everything from really kind of plain vanilla investments in how to keep the grid going to more exotic and exciting things like building new solar power, new windmills out on, you know, the Plain States or near New York.
So on the green front, what's going on? How does private investment, private capital flow today compare with, I don't know, last year when things were really roaring?
Well, we've seen some fall-offs in the sort of earliest stage. You know, your next guests, I think John Doerr and Fred Krupp will be speaking about this in some more detail. One of the things that the recession does is the sources that feed venture capital. These tend to be high net worth individuals or institutions with endowments, insurance funds. They put a little bit of money aside for very high risk yet high return ventures, like, you know, seeding Google is your dream version.
Sure.
A lot of that money is being put into things like biofuels, new solar technologies. That's fallen off. That's slowed down and begun to fall off in the last year as people kind of figure out how much money they have. You know, solar is still very hot. Biofuels are very kind of getting a lot of attention too. But without the kind of seed money coming from those venture capitalists, it's slowed things down. The good news, though, of course, is that replacing a lot of that money, you know, we're talking billions of dollars being shifted out of fresh investments into startups. That's being substituted for by a lot of money from the federal government. As you mentioned, the Recovery Reinvestment Act has plowed some $60 billion, depending on how you cut it, into direct investment in energy and tax incentives that kind of stimulate energy.
How do investors look at that, Adam? The payoff of government investment versus the payoff from private sector venture capital, private capital flows, is it all the same, fungible, or does it matter when people are judging the prospects for the green economy, whether it's Uncle Sam's dough or private investment capital?
No, this is a classic case where, as the economists are lecturing us right now, the government really has a kind of catalytic ability, a role to kind of stimulate and jumpstart investments that the private sector, especially given how nervous it is right now, is a little tentative to take. Doesn't mean that the public sector has to put up 100% of the cost, but if the government is willing to put in, say, 10 cents on every dollar necessary to build something new, it gives a little comfort to the investors. I'll give you one really quick example and try and keep it simple. A lot of solar big solar facilities, as well as people's rooftop solars, are benefited by a tax incentive, meaning that if you buy them, you can deduct a bit of the cost from your tax bill.
Right.
Companies
rely
on this too. Now, in the last year, the market for companies seeking these, they're called tax equity credits, has dried up completely. The companies aren't buying them because they're not profitable. They don't have to pay taxes the way they did 2 years ago.
So they don't need a tax credit.
Right, no tax credit necessary. In that place, the government has said, all right, well, tax credit equity isn't working. Let's step in and turn that just for a year or two, temporarily, into a direct kind of repayment to those who are willing to make the investment in solar.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly for the individual, it's economic in the long run to do that. Solar will pay for itself in the span of, depending on what you do, anywhere from 5 to, say, 10 years, how big it is, et cetera. But it may be just a little too expensive up front for an individual or company to jump on right now, given the way credit markets are. But the government stepped in and said, here, we'll give you a little bit of a boost here and, you know, go for it.
What about the fall in oil prices? They, of course, have come way, way down since last summer, you know, roughly $100 down.
Easily, yeah. We're, you know, at a third maybe, given I think we're around $50.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that was a huge incentive for investment in alternative energy, obviously.
Absolutely. Now, two things to keep in mind here. One, and this is really important, is that oil doesn't affect electricity prices as much as people kind of collectively think. They connect the two psychologically. Most of the renewable...
We sure see it at the gas pump, though,
Adam. Right, indeed. And that's kind of affecting, that's the place that's got the least amount of progress, I'd say, in the renewable space. Biofuels, ethanol is what you hear a lot about there.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I think you see a lot in the paper right now, solar energy, wind power, you know, efficiency investment by utilities and people putting insulation in their homes, that tends to be a little bit more about electricity. Now, more to the point, and to agree with you, it's the psychological dampener is very strong there. It means that companies that, say, could have made money with electricity prices at, a say, 15% higher than now, or oil prices 100% now, are less likely to get profitable faster, less likely to get venture capital. But it's a problem that we have as a people. It's kind of all on, all off, I think. There's a sense that the minute gas comes below $2, the crisis is over and we can go back to worrying about other things. And I think everyone, you know, you'll talk to today, politicians on either side of the aisle will agree. The anticipation is oil prices, energy prices, commodity prices will continue to grow because population is a fundamental force in the world. Everyone is getting slowly richer, demanding more materials, more energy as they get more wealthy.
So sooner or later, it swings in here. But right now, oil prices way down and the economy in big trouble. We're going to look at the impact of that on the green economy birth that everybody's been talking about. Adam Aston at Businessweek magazine. Adam, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
We'll hear in a few minutes from legendary venture capitalist John Doerr in Silicon Valley. But first, joining us from New York is Fred Krupp, president of the Environmental Defense Fund. He's one of the foremost champions of harnessing market forces for environmental ends. Sat on a Green Jobs panel alongside Vice President Joe Biden in Philadelphia last month. He's co-author of the New York Times bestseller Earth, the Sequel, The Race to Reinvent Energy and Stop Global Warming, adapted this month for a Discovery Channel show. Fred Krupp, thank you very much for being here.
Delighted to be here with you, Tom.
You've been on this bandwagon for a long time. A year ago, it was going like gangbusters with oil at nearly 150 and the economy down, but not nearly down like it's down now. What has the change in oil prices and economic vigor meant for the green economy vision, Fred?
Well, certainly the deep recession we're in creates the need to do things differently. And I think as we look back on 2009, a couple of years from now, there'll be two things that happened. One, the story of the measures that were undertaken to deal with the financial crisis. And second, how we changed our economy by revolutionizing energy policy by putting a cap on carbon. And so besides the recession, one of the big differences from a year ago, Tom, is we have a new president. And President Obama has said, you know, we need to put a market-based cap on carbon pollution into place. We'd be the last industrialized nation to do so in order to use his words, to truly transform the economy. And so I think his vision and the vision that Larry Summers, his chief economic advisor, reiterated just Friday in a speech to the Brookings Institute is that we can jumpstart job creation in this country by taking our energy systems, really the lifeblood of our of commerce in this country, and rebuilding them, overhauling them to be ready for this new century.
You know, it sounds great. Americans look back to the New Deal era, the Great Depression, and how a combination of things, but that included government policy plus a huge economic ramp up into World War II brought the economy out of that. Do you see the environmental side of this as the equivalent of World War II? And does it really create more jobs or just replace fossil fuel jobs?
Good question, Tom. And I think your metaphor is really on target. People look back at the Great Depression and say that although the New Deal had some impact, it wasn't till the country mobilized and galvanized to fight World War II that we really got out of the economic mess. And I think what you saw from President Obama's speech to the Joint Session of Commerce a few weeks ago was his view that galvanizing our country to fight a war on global warming can do the same thing. In terms of jobs, one of the first things that's happening all around this country, thanks to the early steps in the Recovery Act, and one of the things that will get a great acceleration when we pass a carbon cap, is spending for energy efficiency. And these are the hardest working dollars in America now, because if you think back to FDR's time, he was investing in, building paths and parks, which as an environmentalist, I think that's a great thing. But when we put people to work to insulate homes, we save those consumers dollars that otherwise go overseas to pay for the imported oil. We're providing jobs at home, and we're leaving money in the consumer's pocketbook that can be spent elsewhere in the economy. And the jobs of weatherizing homes, by definition, are all U.S. jobs.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the green economy and whether it will save the day or go down with the economic bust. We've been joined by Fred Krupp, president of the Environmental Defense Fund, joining us today from New York. He's co-author of Earth, the sequel, well known for his push to harness market forces for environmental ends. Fred Krupp is in New York. We're joined right now as well from Menlo Park, California by John Doerr, legendary Silicon Valley venture capitalist, partner at Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield & Byers. He's also, as of late, on President Obama's new Economic Recovery Advisory Board announced last month by Chairman Paul Volcker. He's led investments through Kleiner Perkins in all kinds of great, big, successful startups, Google and Amazon and Intuit. Bill Joy at Sun had their backing. He's turned his focus now toward green technology. John Doerr, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Tom.
The environment in terms of energy prices and economic robustness has changed a lot since you began championing green tech. How's that changed your outlook for the businesses you'd like to start, John Doerr?
Well, the largest change to the environment is the economic crisis. And that's made us and made entrepreneurs even more focused on how it is that we get great returns from innovations in green technology. The rise and fall of oil prices has not had a big effect on our work. We take a long-term view of what will happen with the price of energy around the world, and we believe it's going up.
But for many, many years, people said those low oil prices, low gasoline prices and oil prices were, in fact, a big drag on investment in green tech. Why is that different now?
Well, I believe that we believe that oil prices, energy prices are going to go up. And that's because for the longest period of time, we've not been taking into account the true costs of using energy. And in particular, dumping 70 million tons of CO2 in our atmosphere every day as if it was some kind of open, free sewer. So I believe, and I'm advocating, that we put a price on carbon as one of the most important policies we could adopt. I believe we will adopt. That's a system known as cap and trade, which has been championed more by our former guest just on the program before me, Fred Krupp, than perhaps any other person. When we start accounting for the real price of dumping carbon in our atmosphere, energy prices are going to rise, and that's going to encourage even more innovation and speed innovation faster to rebuild a green economy.
Fred Krupp in New York, cap and trade is going to come before Congress before long. Bring us up to speed on that. When will Capitol Hill see some legislation put before it, do you expect? And do you think it'll go through?
Well, Tom, I've just come back to New York from Washington, where I was last night speaking to the Democratic House Congressional Caucus. So Speaker Pelosi and Henry Waxman and Steny Hoyer and Ed Markey, who are all working on this climate legislation, were there. And at this open session with well over 100 congressmen in attendance, there was quite a good discussion about climate, how to do it in a way that creates a spark in our otherwise grim economy. And on the schedule, Tom, what Chairman Waxman has said is he intends to mark up this legislation in the Energy and Commerce Committee between now and Memorial Day. So that's not very far away.
John Doerr, you've got hundreds of millions, I guess, is probably the right way of approximated it, invested in clean tech, green tech. How important is the cap-and-trade legislation to you? What are you watching most closely as it moves before Congress? Are you confident it will come out in a way that will support investments like yours and others of that ilk? Are there pitfalls that you're worried about?
That's a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. We have $600 million that my partners and I have invested in the last 3 years in some 45 different ventures, all led by great American entrepreneurs, real revolutionaries who hope to bring a lot of innovation to build this new green economy. There's five policies that I think really matter the most. And of those, putting a price on carbon, cap and trade is the most important. So it matters. These entrepreneurs are going to do their work with or without it. But we have a real crisis in terms of both speed and scale of the innovation that we need. We need this innovation to rebuild our economy. We need it to deal with the climate crisis. We need it to deal with energy security. So I'm optimistic we will see a price put on carbon, a cap and trade bill. But I don't dare to sit here today and tell you what form that bill will take, and the details matter.
Fred Krupp, as you watch that legislation, are there pitfalls that you have your eye on, sort of backsliding clauses or provisions that you're concerned could be slipped in there that might leave us with some kind of legislation but not the real impact?
Well, frankly, that's always a danger, Tom, with Congress. And, you know, there is always the fear that we could have a piece of legislation, a piece of paper that says climate change on the top and then is riddled with loopholes. The biggest loophole would be not to have a cap. We tried with acid rain successfully 20 years ago in the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990 to use this cap and trade system, and it worked. Basically, we brought the emissions of sulfur dioxide in this country down by half at 10% the price that was predicted. And even in the Bush administration, I say even in the latest Bush administration, where he was not known as a champion on global warming, he did, given the fact that there was so much innovation, so much new technology, so much improvements in the acid rain removal systems, he was able to order an additional 60% cut in 2005. And so sulfur dioxide emissions will fall from 20 million tons nationwide to about 3 million tons nationwide. So we've tried basically harnessing greed and telling entrepreneurs, if you figure out the best way to take this pollution out of the sky, the more you take out, the more value you'll be creating. And that way we use the traditional profit motive to produce what we all need, which is cleaner air. And I have confidence that the congressional leadership has its eye on the ball and will work with the White House to produce legislation that will have that firm cap that creates this declining schedule of pollution permits. And it sounds complicated. Just, Tom, I would just say it's very simple if you think of it this way. Under a cap-and-trade system, if you don't have a permit to emit pollution, you can't. It's illegal. Mm-hmm. And the number of permits goes down every year. So the public is guaranteed an enforceable result. With the acid rain system, the EPA tells us they've had the best compliance record, about 100% compliance. of any of the programs they've ever put in place.
And now we're talking carbon reduction, no more open sewer in the sky, a new revenue stream. Barack Obama, President Obama says he'll put into middle class tax cuts and a huge incentive for people to look for alternative, cleaner forms of energy. John Doerr in Menlo Park, let's just get you on the record here. If for some reason it shouldn't pass, if cap and trade doesn't go through, you've been called the most influential venture capitalist of your generation. What's your assessment of the impact on the economy if this doesn't pass?
It's bad. I think innovation in green technologies is the key to long-term growth and American prosperity over the next couple of decades. I like to compare green technology with the internet technologies. 15 years ago, Tom, there was not a web browser. Think how much you take for granted the web browser and pointing and clicking to find information, to buy products, to educate yourself and your kids, to really transform every way that we live. Well, America led the IT revolution, and today the internet economy is about $1 trillion. There's about 1.5 billion internet users worldwide. Remember those two numbers, $1 trillion and 1.5 billion users. Without a doubt, America is the worldwide leader in the internet revolution. And that's created enormous wealth, enormous efficiencies, contributed really to our everything that we love about America.
But Fred,
one trip. Stay with me for just a moment.
Okay.
So the internet, $1 trillion and 1.5 billion. The energy economy is $6 trillion.
Ooh.
And there's 4 billion users of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So in comparison, I like to say that energy is really the mother of all markets, and we have to transform energy all around the planet. And for that reason, I think it's the largest economic opportunity of the 21st century. Most importantly, it's not at all guaranteed that America is going to lead in energy, in green, as we did in the internet. In fact, if you go to the top 30 companies around the world, the top 10 in solar, the top 10 in wind, and the top 10 in advanced batteries, of those 30 companies, America today only holds 6. And that fact should worry us a lot.
Let's get a call here. Mike in Middlesex, Vermont. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I love your show. I just wanted to say that I think the $78 billion in the stimulus plan is not nearly enough. When we can spend hundreds of billions on banks and AIG and so forth, I think we should be putting a lot more into such a great thing and making a concerted federal effort here, similar to what the Manhattan Project was back in the 50s.
So crank it up even further. John Doerr, how about it? There are many billions here, 60 or 78, depending how you calculate. What do you think about so much riding on that government money, public money, stimulus money in the green economy? I mean, guys like you are celebrated for having a very sophisticated expert eye finding that needle in the haystack of the next opportunity. Will government billions be as effective as private capital in promoting a green economy?
Well, that's a great question. The caller is exactly right. We need more and much, much more. But remember that more money flows through the private capital markets in a day than through all the governments in the world in a year. So this $70 or $80 billion kickstart in the stimulus bill, the recovery bill, is really wise. I think it's been well targeted.
But it's also that what you're saying there is not true at the moment, right? Private capital flows right now are way less than the stimulus hundreds of billions that they're talking about. The private tap is off, isn't it?
That's true. And so one of the best parts of that stimulus bill is that there's an allocation of about $10 billion for loan guarantees. And what that means is the American taxpayer is going to guarantee that no more than $10 billion will be lost on loans, because with a $10 billion loan guarantee, the country can go borrow $100 billion of debt, and with the government guarantee, the banks will lend that money. And then that $100 billion of debt is typically matched by another $100 billion worth of private equity or private capital. So we took $10 billion of guarantees from the taxpayers, which are likely to be repaid, and turned it into $200 billion worth of jobs and economic growth.
That sounds like a good deal. We've been keeping an awful lot of listeners waiting. Let's begin to bring more in. Don in Florence, South Carolina. You're on the air, Don.
Yes. I've often thought that many of these problems that you're talking about could be solved by increasing the price of a barrel of oil to where stabilizing it, because the oil companies don't know whether to drill or not to drill, and the auto manufacturers don't know whether to build SUVs or hybrids.
But how do you do that? Have the government set the price of fossil fuels, of oil, somehow, in this country at least? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. Say, stabilize it at $100 a barrel. Then the oil companies will know what to do. The car manufacturers know what to do, because the public will demand certain things.
But wouldn't the public kick the politician who did that right out of office when gas went back to, I don't know what that would mean, $3.50?
Of course. That's right. But that's the thing to do, is to make it to where people will know what to do. We need to raise capital. We need to conserve, and it seems like the law of supply and demand doesn't work
when you're
running out of resources.
Right. Keep that fossil fuel price up high through government intervention. Fred Krupp, that, however, is related. I mean, I'm reading here that a lot of members of Congress are afraid that even the cap-and-trade scheme may dramatically increase the price of energy and compound the current recession, just when this recession, or call it what you will, is really hurting people.
Well, you have to do the cap-and-trade system in a way that protects people and makes sure there is not a price shock during the transition. I don't think America is going to set the price of oil. We did actually try that back in the presidency of Gerald Ford. There were price controls on natural gas. It didn't work at all. People stopped drilling. I know the caller is saying set the price high. I don't think we'll try that either, for the reasons that you suggested, Tom. But I think what we can do is create certainty as to what the rules on carbon pollution are going to be. And what I am told by many of the folks that are running utilities is right now they have big capital spending plans to get workers working in America to build big power plants, but they can't unfreeze those investments, not because they don't have access to the capital. Actually, people pay their utility bills, so their credit ratings are pretty high, and they can borrow money now. But they're not making these expenditures because there's so much uncertainty as to what the rules will be and when they will come into place. For example, Jim Rogers, the CEO of Duke Energy, which is the third largest burner of coal in the country.
Yeah, we've talked to Jim.
Yeah, he says he's got a $25 billion infrastructure spending plan in the next 5 years, but it's largely on hold, waiting to see what Congress does on this issue. And that's one of the reasons he, as an industry that would be regulated, is asking Congress, end this uncertainty, unfreeze these investments. And there's many, many business folks right now in this huge sector of our economy that are just frozen. As Larry Summers said, tell a man what to do. If you tell him yes, he knows what to do. If you tell him no, he knows what to do. But if you tell him I'm not sure, paralysis.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the green economy and whether it will save the day. We'll go down with the bust. We've been joined by venture capitalist John Doerr in Menlo Park, California, partner at Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield & Byers, legendary VC in California. He's on President Obama's new Economic Recovery Advisory Board, one of 15 on that board. His firm has backed startups like Google and Amazon, Intuit, Sun. You've heard of them. He's got a big focus, they do, on green technologies now. Fred Krupp is here, president of the Environmental Defense Fund, very outspoken in the push to harness market forces for environmental ends. Of course, the country needs market forces big time right now, and we've heard a lot about the environmental challenges. Let's get a lot of callers. Chris in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, you're on the air, Chris.
Hi, thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
I think we have to be careful about how we need to take another look at history again and not make the same mistakes. It seems to me, I go way back when I was in grade school, we had a Clean Air Act going on in the 60s, and then all of a sudden Watergate happened. Then again, there was a gas crunch and a recession when we were trying to green up again in the 80s. Then there was a recycling plan and a Clean Air, Clean Water Act that was going on in the late 90s, and then all of a sudden we had the War on Terror. And it seems to be happening again, only now it seems to be attacking us only the opposite direction, and it's going to drive gas prices down and cause demand to go up.
Always something that gets in the way of the Green Revolution.
Exactly.
So, and you fear it again this time? Let's take it to Fred Krupp. Fred, what do you say?
Well, I think, you know, we have got the best opportunity we've ever had to have Congress do one of those things that it does on occasion, act boldly, and really transform things for the better. You know, it's the equivalent of passing the Clean Air Act or the Voting Rights Act, something that will really be good for America. That's the opportunity we have now. And we can look at California, where John Doerr, who's been such a great leader in this area, not only through the companies he's funded, but he was a leader to get California to pass AB 32, which is a cap-and-trade law that put a carbon limit on the California economy. And one of the things that's happening there today, I'm sure John knows many others, but is Southern California Edison is, thanks to AB 32, deploying huge numbers of rooftop solar units on many homes throughout their service area, basically creating a distributed power plant on a lot of people's roofs. These are the sort of innovations that are possible if nationwide, if Congress acts. So I think this time we're going to get over the finish line.
John Doerr, I'm reading here Michael Levy writing in Slate, and you know he sees the enthusiasm for this change. A rally in Washington last month where they're chanting, climate change, what's the solution? A green jobs revolution. But he says the fundamental problem is that there's no solid evidence that green policies will actually lower the long-term unemployment rate. It might make some huge profits for VC investors like yourself, but what about the evidence that when you take away the fossil fuel jobs, plug in the green jobs, Barack Obama's talking about 5 million new jobs over 5 years or something like that. Michael Levy's saying, you know, you maybe there's no net gain here.
Oh, I disagree with that. The best evidence I can cite is what's happened in the state of California with efficiency programs in energy. And you know, California, unlike almost all the rest of the country, has been able to keep its energy use per citizen flat over the last 20 years, while it's nearly doubled throughout the country. And that's because of a few things, one of which is it created incentives for the California utilities to save energy so that California utilities are just as much rewarded for getting the users to save an electron as it is for building a new power plant. That's a policy called decoupling. Mm. Another key California step was to set really tough and good standards for buildings, building standards, appliance efficiency standards. And so the data is over the last 20 years, these programs have saved the California economy $56 billion and created a million and a half jobs. My favorite jobs example, and it's part of the Economic Recovery Act, is to encourage utilities all across the country and states to hire out-of-work construction workers and put them to work insulating homes. Now, the genius of this is it's important work to do, and when the homes are insulated, forever that home is more efficient, and we don't waste American wealth and dollars by trying to heat up the atmosphere of the neighborhood. Those saved dollars go back into the economy in the form of purchased goods and services, and everyone's better off.
Let's go to Joe in Columbia, South Carolina. Joe, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Well, what do you know, Joe?
I had a company called Agritech Producers, and we are very excited about commercializing some wonderful technology from North Carolina State University that converts biomass into a much more usable fuel and feedstock that can displace the amount of coal that utilities burn, and also allow for those who wish to make cellulosic ethanol to make it much easier and more efficiently. We've been helped, and I wanted to make this point, we've been helped a lot by state grants and state incentives. North Carolina has passed a portfolio standard. Virginia has a Renew Virginia initiative. So the states in which we're active are also providing fantastic stimulus, And that, when complemented by the federal support, we think is going to help make the green sector go very well.
But when do you get off of the need for that government stimulus? You know, when does the economy kick in and float your boat, send you soaring? That's what's needed, isn't it, ultimately, Joe?
Well, we're in a very interesting niche in that we can actually produce material that can actually cost less than the coal alternative. So we think that while we'd love to have additional incentives, we think we're in the marketplace now.
So there it is, John Doerr. Here's one example. You must have others that are close to the market supporting them. But you may have people sitting here scratching their head and saying, you know, the economy is in desperate straits. How much longer do we have to be subsidizing or supporting these things with public money? When does the market actually take off and not only support this on its own, but gain speed and traction from efforts like Joe's?
Well, I'd say to our listeners that all of the entrepreneurial ventures that we're backing work, make economic sense without any additional subsidies in the market. If there are incentives and subsidies, they're going to work faster and contribute to the economy even better. But we've got to never underestimate the power of entrepreneurs, because time and time again, the great entrepreneurs do more than anyone thinks possible with less than anyone thinks possible. So the innovations, it's hard to imagine what a new green economy would look like. Mm-hmm. We've lived with fossil fuels for such a long period of time. But the caller cited taking millions of tons of municipal waste and turning those into clean electricity and fertilizer instead of dumping it into landfills. That's just one of several dozen really smart ideas that make economic sense today.
Let me ask you, Toyota was a big company that was entrepreneurial with hybrids, has been for years with the Prius. And we kicked off the show looking at these numbers where a year ago or nearly a year ago, they only had 2 days stock of Prius on the lots. They were selling so fast, that's all they could keep there. They were selling for thousands of dollars above the sticker price. Now they've got 80 days worth of Prius on the lots in this country. John, what does that say? I mean, here they made the right investment. They had a popular product when oil was high and the economy still had enough oomph in it, but now oil's low again. And there's no, you know, demand. You know where it is. It's way down, and they're sitting there with the problem. What should we take away from that story?
Well, there's more going on than the price of oil, and we are in an unprecedented economic crisis. Automobile sales have plummeted from 16 million new vehicles to some estimates are as few as 10 million. That's a dramatic decline, and to address that, and the administration and Obama and Congress, I think, are taking bold steps. We got to fix our banking system. We've got to fix our housing loan problems. And the third leg of this stool is we've got to get jobs created again in the economy. By any measure, the American economy is not fully employed. And so that's where government stimulus can step in and get things moving again. This isn't going to happen overnight. And millions of really wonderful people are being unnecessarily hurt by excesses of the past and failures to really have tough and appropriate regulations. But your question was when. My answer is I don't know, but I'm optimistic that by the end of this year, we can begin to see the economy turn.
Let's go to Diva in Norwich, Connecticut. Diva, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am a professor at Three Rivers Community College in Connecticut.
Great.
Where I teach environmental and civil engineering technologies. We have several other environmental or engineering technology programs at Three Rivers, and we just received a fairly large grant from the Department of Labor to develop and implement sustainable green certificate programs to get folks out into that type of job career where they would be working with green, sustainable careers.
In other words, a grant to train students for careers in the green economy.
Yes, exactly.
So when do you think you won't need a grant like that? The economy will have such demand for those positions that it just works on its own. I mean, that's what we need, isn't it?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I have a program. It's environmental engineering technology. We've got we've had several programs that foster sustainable development and career opportunities. But this is more of a certificate so that it's instead of an associate's degree, they go directly to work after getting the certificate if they choose to.
Yeah, so there's more government encouragement, and we hear it. Let's get another right here. John in New York City. You're on the air, John.
How are you? I want to ask your panel if they're familiar with something called commissioning. In Europe, it's fairly well spread. It's basically where an engineer, of which I'm one, goes into a building and either when it's going to be built or it's standing, and it looks at the total building from the top to the bottom, chillers, so on and so forth, and they certify or slash commission this building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Europe, that adds anywhere from about 10 to 20% to the value of the property.
They certify it as green, as efficient, energy efficient.
Energy efficient. Mm-hmm. It's doing the best it can, whether it's the light bulbs they're using or the way that they're operating, you know, their air conditioning and heating, and top to bottom.
And the building becomes more valuable. Our time is short, John, but let me take that to Fred Krupp. Fred, what about it? Do we have any counterpart here? Do we need it?
We do. We have a program called LEEDS in the United States where people seek certification, silver, gold, or platinum, to say that their building is green, sustainable, and energy efficient. I want to go back, Tom, for one second to the previous caller who, and your repeated line of questioning, when does this really take off? And I view it as, you know, a starting gun needs to be fired. And while the Recovery Act is a great start, a kickstart, as John Doerr said, to really get this race started, the most important race of our time, indeed of any time, we need Congress to pass that fundamental new law like the Voting Rights Act, but in this case, a cap on carbon. And I'll give you an example. In Michigan, a fellow named Jeff Metz, he's president of Dowding Manufacturing, Dowding Machining.
Mm-hmm.
He makes big metal pieces. He's just invested several million dollars to make new equipment that will make big parts. I'm talking 20-ton parts that go into wind turbines.
Yep.
He's been hiring laid-off auto workers in Michigan, and he's anticipating that when you get the climate legislation that puts this mandatory declining cap on how much carbon pollution can just be spewed into the sky, thrown into the sky without regard to anybody else, that that's the forcing mechanism that really gets his business to take off, and then you don't need more government subsidies. And you can think of it as two blades of a scissors. One blade is the Recovery Act spending, the government money, and the other blade is the private capital that starts to flow when you get the cap and trade program. And then those two blades of the scissors cut our way out of this economic mess.
Who wouldn't be for that? We need it urgently. John Doerr, we don't get you off. And what's your vision here? If this all works, you're the private capital side of those scissors. But if this all works, what do you see on the other side of the recession, depression, whatever we're in now, with the green economy, American standing, economic health? What could the payoff be?
Well, that's a great question. I want to connect the idea of the Apollo mission, the Manhattan Project, with what Fred just told us.
Mm-hmm.
Because as one of our callers said and others suggest, we need something on the scale of the Apollo mission, the Manhattan Project. But remember, those were merely multi-billion dollar efforts in one country from one government agency. And frankly, they failed to convey the scale of this challenge, which is to reindustrialize all the cities, all the states, in every country around the planet. As Al Gore likes to put it, today we are borrowing money from China to buy oil from the Persian Gulf, and then we burn it in ways that destroy the planet. Every bit of that has got to stop. Fred's comment about the race is exactly right. We won, America won the space race with the Soviet Union. Today, as Tom Friedman says, we're in an earth race with other nations to see who's going to invent the technologies so that men and women can stay on Earth. And I want to add, today America is not winning. If we get this thing right, what's going to happen is America will be the worldwide winner in the next great global industry, which is great technology. So
there's still the chance for that victory. We hear about Japan, we hear about Germany, even China. The U.S. is still in it for the number one slot if we get it right?
If we get it right, we can win. But a lot's got to change.
Fred Krupp, you know, cap and trade, I guess we've just got 20 seconds, but that's step one in your view, obviously, and a big one.
It is, but John's being too modest. I mean, he's at the center, the epicenter of America's great strength is our entrepreneurial energy, our innovation, our engineers. We put them to work, we can win that race and save the planet.
Well, there's the case, and it sounds pretty good. If we can do it, everybody's going to be watching, a whole lot of people in it, John Doerr in it, right up to his neck, and we wish you luck with it. John Doerr at Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield & Byers, joining us from Menlo Park, California. Great to talk with you. Come again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And Fred Krupp, president of the Environmental Defense Fund in New York. Fred, thank you for joining us today.
Great to be here, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.